Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
I'm Erica Weitz, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Greg Blaze, and today I'm lucky enough to have three special guests with me in the studio. I have Rachel Jewell, a.k.a. Jewel, Anna Jewell, a.k.a. what I call Mama Jewel, and I have Leah Lewis Jewel Lewis Lewis Jewel Ramos with me in the studio today.
Wow.
All three of them together are the Jewel ladies, or as I call them, a great family of cheese-slinging, traveling gals. That at least one of them has been my friend for a long time, but, you know, I think they'd all admit to being my friends on some level. So thank you, ladies, so much for coming in the studio with me today.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Thank you.
So I wanted to talk a little bit, just because, I've done biz with you, Leah, for a while, and we become good friends. And then I met your mom, and I met Rachel after I met you, and I just think you guys are an awesome, interesting family of cheesemongery, cheesy people. And, I needed to get you in here. So I was wondering if one of you gals would offer up. So where are you guys from? Where's the Jewel family originate?
Wow, depends how far you go back, I guess.
As far back as you want to go.
we've been a few different places. You know, actually, we grew up in the Midwest. My husband's family, they all farm, dairy farmers, actually, in Iowa. And our kids were born there. And then we spent some time in Minneapolis and time out in Salt Lake City in Utah area. And now I've been in New York for 7 years. But, you know, our culture way back is German, you know, Czech, kind of Swedish heritage.
I got a little Swedish in me as well. I was wondering, Anna, what did you do before you got into cheese?
Before I lost my mind?
Yes.
Yeah, I know. would you believe, actually, I was a nurse. And, you know, for a good share of my life, yeah. Somewhat of a kind of project manager, developer of various different things over the years for hospitals. And but always had, like many people do in cheese, had another like life of loving food and the culture and the relationship, you know, that people have with food. And so when an opportunity came up to kind of make a transition into cheese, the timing was right.
When did you do that?
About 2000. So it's been about 15 years or about.
And what was your first admit? But you owned a store yourself, correct?
Yeah, we did.
Where was that?
Actually, in Salt Lake City. It was a nice, you know, beautiful location there at the foothills of the Rocky Mountains, and a long-established cheese store there that we bought at that time.
And did you all work together in the cheese shop?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was a
illegal employee, just cash only.
Child labor?
Yeah, total child labor.
She was totally behind
bleach
the counter.
Countertops, followed yeah. the cheesemongers.
The
bleach,
best
bleach, bleach.
Child
yeah.
labor.
That's yeah. the best. Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, you can't be fired and you can't quit.
Exactly.
She and still makes the best Reuben.
I do.
Ever.
I am quite proud of
that's,
that.
That's awesome. How long did you have your shop?
About 5 years. Yeah.
And you guys worked together the whole time. So you said yeah. you, how old were you, Rachel?
But the 12 when you guys started talking about it. And then I think by the time they bought it, it was like 13. So, yeah.
That's great. And what did you do?
I would have been 16, 17. I've been in cheese half my life, we figured out in the car on the way here, which is kind of crazy, but awesome.
And your first job working in cheese was
with
your
mom.
Own store.
Yeah, mom on a Saturday morning was great. Like, you're going to work the cheese counter. And I was like, what?
Do you remember? Yeah. I mean, she knew very little about cheese at all. No. None of us really did. Our background was a little bit more into beef and meat, uh-huh. you know? And took over cheese like she'd been in it, you know, from the beginning, from her whole life. It was amazing.
Yeah, I think she had never read books or anything like that. And especially, too, out there, you know, especially way back when the logistics and the distribution, there wasn't just tons of, like, information about and access to cheese people to pick their brains. You know, unlike if you're in New York City, I mean, how many people could you go to and be like, oh, hey, I'm opening a shop. Can you give me some tips? Like, there was none of that. Nothing. All there was, you know, cheese primer.
I still have my original cheese primer. It's missing pieces and like there's sticky notes and highlights and notes, but that was my Bible. That's all I had. And I had to do all the buying. So I would do all the buying before I went to school. Like I'd get up at 4
really?
In the morning
in French.
With the catalogs
at the time, right?
And a French dictionary and the cheese primer and like try to figure out. And then it was like doing math because the little goats were packed, you know, like 6 in a case. And
sure.
what were these grams and kilograms and... Oh, my God. Yeah.
How did you get the cheese there to Salt Lake? You ordered it direct?
We'd buy from a distributor and build a pallet and then truck it out of Chicago.
Our local producers, which there were some at that time, even, you know, 15 years ago in California and regionally, you know, we'd air ship some of those small, you know, petite style, you know, cheeses in.
Yeah, I remember when we first, it was this like revolutionary thing, Cowgirl Creamery.
Sure.
And I remember Lee and I just getting so excited at the idea because it was like, we didn't know any cheeses. And so it was all just ordering from a catalog and like, I don't know, it's kind of general generic cheeses.
Certainly.
And so this was the first time we had like real art, we felt artisanal, you know, it was like, yeah. oh my word, we're excited. It's these women. In California who are just changing the world. And I mean, this was 15 years ago, so they were really like, I mean, still are, but it was a big deal back then. So for two kids in Salt Lake City who knew nothing about cheese, it was, I just remember getting like Mount Tams and being like, oh my God, these are so fancy.
Yeah.
They're so good.
Yeah, exactly. Do you remember the first time Max McCallman's book came out, The
sure.
Cheese Plate?
Absolutely.
You know, Leah and I sat, it was before the internet, before, almost, right, pretty much. And,
it was dial-up. It was definitely
yeah,
ghetto.
It was, yeah.
Definitely
it was
ghetto. The noise.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole thing.
The phone line had to be into the wall. And
yeah, exactly. So we finally get our first book, and we're in the back office, like, checking out what's happening in New York City, you know, reading our first real cheese book. I told him that a while back. It's pretty funny now. You never know what happens down the road, you know?
Well, no. I mean, that's the thing. I still just love, I love the idea that... that you had that family thing going there from the beginning. Mm-hmm. That's great.
They were good employees, I have to say. You know?
Yeah.
You know, it's always that time as an owner when your other employees, if they don't show up for work, guess who gets called on their day off?
Oh, yeah. I'd have a test to study for the next morning and be like, no, you're coming to close the shop.
Yeah.
And now you work together again.
I need
so.
You.
Yeah.
I need you.
But what about Papa Jewel? Does Papa, there's
he
a
eats and drinks.
Yeah.
He
he's our taste tester. Official.
No. He's like the rock.
Quality
of,
control.
And quality control, too. But he's the rock and the man behind all of what works for us. You know, he's amazing.
Yeah. That's great. I just want to know, what was the name of your shop?
Jewel House Market and Deli.
Jewel House Market
Jewel
House. And Deli.
H-A-U-S.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. And then now, obviously, you still all work in cheese. But what happened? Did you close the store and you guys stayed in working in cheese? And you went back to...
Yeah, then we came to New York.
Uh-huh.
So we said it was time to do something different. And John's employment opportunities, you know, happened here in New York, which was so great. And so we all moved to New York City.
But in the meantime, we'd all kind of gone our own ways. Leah had the total cheese bug. And so when we closed the store, she needed work and to stay in cheese. I was still in high school, so I was finishing up school.
You had other things to
I had other things to worry about. I wanted to get a job at the Gap. I was super, like, you denied me my teenage years. I need that Gap job. It lasted 2 months
right
because
here.
I hated it.
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing out west. There were no cheese jobs, and I I had become the cheese nerd in high school, and I wanted to stay in cheese, so I went to work for Whole Foods. It was pretty much the only place in town. Actually, I moved to Colorado. I worked there a year, and I came back to Utah to move to New York with Mom and Dad, and I ended up working at a great restaurant up in the hills for a Swiss chef who let me do a cheese cart for a year, which was a really great learning experience. It was a totally different view of cheese, but it was a great experience. And actually, he now is one of the founders of High West Distillery, who do the great whiskeys and bourbons.
Their booze is fantastic.
Yeah, and he's one of the founders of that now. So,
Where did you work for Whole Foods, and how was that
experience? Boulder, Colorado.
Nice.
It taught me an enormous amount about retail, because my only experience had been a small family-run business. So to work for a large corporate-run business, but that had some very good values and good focus, and they let me do a lot of cheese education, and I got to see products that I'd never gotten to see before. It was a great learning experience.
So the products are what made you want to continue working in the
business? It was the stories and the families behind it and the preservations of... I remember the first day working on the counter, and we had a piece of Beaufort, and the monger who was there at the time was explaining to me the story and why it was so great, and the cows and the hills and the French, and I thought, oh my God, nobody told me. Every cheese had a story. I just remember a light going on in my head, like there was a story behind these and that it needed to be told.
Absolutely. Now, you closed the shop, you moved to New York as a family, but you stayed out in Colorado.
I did not. I moved back to New York and worked with James Dumas, who's the founder of High
Park
West.
City. You went to Park City.
Park City, and then we all moved to New York.
Okay.
And I went to work at Artisanal, which is where I met Daphne and Jason, and where the next layer continues.
When
there.
Did you work at Artisanal?
I started as an intern in August of 2007. And then I was cave manager, and I left in May of 2008, and that's where I went to work for Daphne.
That is that far. I have been gone for so long. I lasted 6 months there. That was
seven. So there you go. Wow.
Soldier material.
And then what about you when you graduated from high school?
Yeah, so I loved the food part of it, and I loved the more restaurant aspect of the cafe we had. So I was behind the line and like basically a sous chef unofficially. And I competed in high school in culinary competitions and stuff. That was really where my passion lied, and I really loved it. But then just numerous reasons, kind of a lot of personal, wanted to do something different because this was the family business. I wanted to figure out, is it only because it's my family business, or what do I personally as like Rachel want to do? And so then I decided to go as far away from food as possible, but kept coming back in because I started to work at the restaurant she did the cheese program at, because it's good money.
She just couldn't stay away from the family.
Stay away. No. I couldn't. I wanted to. I remember having a conversation with my dad, and he's like, the money is so good, and you're just a natural at expediting. Just go to this restaurant. Just do it. And I'm like, no, that's what Leah does. That's her identity. I have a different identity. Younger children syndrome, you know, like we want to be all different. But couldn't stay away. And then went through three different majors. The last major in college ended up being food and nutrition. So again, keep coming back closer and closer.
So you got there?
Yeah, I got there. And then I graduated college here in New York. And had a job, was really, really upset with it, super angry, just needed something different that I was passionate about. And remember calling Leah up, and she's like, I don't know, I don't have a time frame for you, but we'll get you back into cheese somehow. And then I attended CMI that year just as her date, her plus one. And
what year was this?
2000.
Second year of CMI, so no, it would have been 10.
2010?
Yeah.
I hadn't graduated college yet, so it was 2011.
2011, yeah,
you're right. It was 2011, and I remember being completely in awe of the fact that I was no longer alone in passion for food, because that was always the
you
weird
saw
thing.
Saw all of the
Yeah, I remember seeing Anthea Femia from Australia with an Australian flag on his back, riding around like a cape, you know? And I was like, oh my word, I'm normal compared to all these people.
And, relatively.
Yeah, relatively.
She keeps telling herself.
That's why I keep telling myself. And I was like, oh wow, because growing up, we were that weird cheese family. I was that kid who schlepped French baguettes in my backpack and sold them, you know?
I was the cheese
You illegally sold French baguettes.
I did
at
my high school. I took the next day sandwiches and sold them for $5.
Anna, were you providing her with these goods?
I thought she was eating it for lunch. No, she's like doing deals.
I was an entrepreneur. Yeah. That's why I'm in sales still. Yeah. I'm good at it.
Yeah, did you when you worked together in the beginning, and then when you dissolved your first business, came to New York? Did you have a feeling that you would stay tight as a family and working together just because of the way you all had worked together when you had your store?
Yeah, you know, it's such an amazing experience for families who have shared that kind of time together and experience. And, you know, is not an easy experience, but what it has done for us as a family and the memories and just the work ethic, the culture that your children learn when they're growing up in a business where they're committed, you know, to the outcomes and customer service, everything. It really is special.
Do you still remember any of your regular customers from that store?
Oh, yeah. Favorites.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Who is your most bizarre customer?
Yeah.
You have it?
You know who we're talking about? Heather's support professor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we had this, we had a bunch of really great, there's a college town, university, there's tons of colleges and universities in Salt Lake. So a natural college place job is a cheese shop, you know, cafe and stuff. So we had this one girl, great, from Vermont. So she had kind of a cheese background. She knew farms and stuff. So she was working in the store, and poor thing, we all, you know, and I feel like this is a code in retail in general. You get your one customer that you get to go to the back for, like,
absolutely,
every time they come in, it's a code.
Off menu items are available.
Exactly,
for them.
That too. And you have your
or you
one,
don't have to wait
or you
on
don't
them.
Have to wait
oh,
on them.
No.
Yeah,
you you'll actually
code.
Slice the cheese by hand for them, whatever they need.
Whatever they need. But then you have the other customers where it's like, I refuse to serve them, and I get
absolutely.
I get my one who I refuse to serve. She had, we all had our one. We didn't know whose hers was yet, and walked in all of a sudden one day, this very tall, very big boned, very masculine looking woman comes in, and all of a sudden we see poor Heather run for the hills in the back, and she's a very calm and even keel, just like Vermont person. We're like, that's really weird, she never freaks out, you know, on stuff. So we're serving, and we kind of go back later, we're like, what's wrong? She's like, that was my professor, but he was a dude before. I just can't do it now. She's like, I just can't do it. And I was just like, okay, Heather, you got your one. Like, so we all had our, that was like the example of like, we all had our one customer you didn't have to serve, but then he had other customers that was like, oh, Leah, you got to come out. It's your person. VIP.
Oh, I just went blank on her name. The older woman that she didn't then did pass. She always sat in the corner and had soup.
Oh, yeah. She always came in for a cup
special.
Of soup. Yeah.
She's adorable. Yeah. You know, you have your favorites, too. You
absolutely.
Know, the good ones. And the ones that are loyal
those
to you.
Those
are
the ones that keep you going.
Totally. Yeah. And, you know, you can set your watch by them,
yeah.
you know, on a Saturday morning.
She'd come
morning.
Around the corner and
she'd
see
she'd come in for
on.
Lunch, bring her book, have her bowl of soup.
She'd kick people
chat.
Out of her table. It was
love
great.
It.
Yeah, they're fun.
I mean, I have regulars, even at, you know, at Eataly, I have my regular customers. I was there on Saturday, and I was all frazzled. I had a class to teach. I had Emily Acosta come in and teach a class with me. We had platters to make. I had to open the store, do whatever, you know. And then this gal, Susie, came up as like a regular customer, and she's like, oh, Greg, you know, it's so nice to see you here. I'm so glad you're here. And I was like, shot back. I was like, yeah, well, that makes one of us, you know. And, like, she just cracked up. But it was like, after I said it, I felt better that I could say it to her. You yeah. know what I mean? Because she was that one. And then my whole day kind of turned around after
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
We had, I remember being fascinated because, again, living kind of in, we always lived in these very conservative places with, you know, not a lot of people from other countries, you know, Iowa, Midwest, Utah, just not a lot of people. And we had this French man who came in with his mother. His mother spoke no English whatsoever. Older, because he had
that.
To be like 50s. He was a professor, and he would come in with her every single Saturday early, because it was like the French tradition, go to the markets and get your stuff early in the day. And I just remember being fascinated by this idea that they held on to their culture so much that every, without fail, it was right when we opened, they'd come in and they'd search out all the French cheeses and all the brie. They were very picky. They would touch, you know,
that.
For texture.
Well, she was going blind, so she would hold the cheese up to her eyes, like, to be able to see it and smell it. Like, you'd see her just stick her head into the case to see if she could smell things.
There's certain customers and there's certain people that I love that for. So I mean, some people I allow to touch the stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Other people I want to, you know, take their hand off
right.
if they go near it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You want to have a little bat that you can swat them with.
But all those people, like, they definitely bring you together. I mean, the bonds of retail. Like, so I asked you, and those were like 15 years ago, but immediately
I
you
see
knew.
Them.
Yeah.
Of course. They live with you probably forever.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably brought you all together too in those certain ways.
Yeah, and you know, they were customers that loved what we were doing, and they were the ones that usually took time that you could tell the story about the cheese too, and you could have that experience that bonded you. And that's what's so great about, like, what I think we're passionate about cheese is to be able to draw that that connection between the cheese producer to the people that are in the industry and also to the retail customer. It's special.
And don't forget, we ended up talking about them at the dinner table later, too.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
You're kind of always at work.
Yeah.
Like, my roommate works at Eataly as well. You know, and like, so, like, it's like you're kind of always there, but it's this, it's really interesting familial bond that you get, even if you're not family, but, I mean, obviously you guys are, so you could go home and hash it out. You know?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Definitely. You didn't get written up or disciplined, but maybe later.
Well, maybe later we could work it out.
Yeah.
Like, maybe we could adjust that.
After hours.
Yeah. There's something about going home with the boss, you know?
Exactly.
For good or for bad, I don't know.
Well, it's funny because people bring that up all the time because Lee and I now work together, and so they're always like, oh, wow, sisters who can work together, especially in small business, there's no one else to buffer, you know? And I tell them, I'm like, I've worked longer with her than I have without. So at this point, I know no different. You know, we just, and we're fortunate. We have a really great relationship, but.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to take a short little break here, but then when we come back, I'm going to talk to the ladies, Jewel, about what they're doing now. Take care.
Farm Families of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board are proud to underwrite Cutting the Curd on heritageradionetwork.org. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 170 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
Hello, and welcome back to Cutting the Curd. Again, I'm here with the Jewel family ladies, with Anna, Mama Jewel, Leah, Lewis, Jewel, Lewis, Lewis, Jewel, and then Rachel Jewel goes by Jewel,
yeah.
Right? So just so we're keeping everything straight. It was great to get a little bit of a back history on you guys. For those of our listeners that don't know, I feel like a lot of the people who listen to our show, and they know you guys, but I love your story. I wanted you to know if you guys would talk to me a little bit about your current projects. So you work together as a family. You grew up slinging cheese and meat and making sandwiches for people and getting all that retail thing down and then getting closer. And then you moved out here to New York and things were different and are different. Leah, I know you work, and that's how I'm come in and how I met you through the company called the Essex Street Cheese Company, which I actually worked for as well.
Our back first in the employee. Day.
I know.
I love that.
Very strange. Very strange.
That's an honor.
Of course, it is. I love it. I love it. I just when you sent me a picture, that picture, I remember. Remember that. I lost that pair of pants, and I really need that pair of pants back.
I was like,
those were
it.
The best cheese-selling pants I ever had.
Did you sell a lot of cheese with them on? Is that why?
No, or I just they were the most practical. Comfortable.
Okay.
You know, like, somehow I think they were my favorite cheese-selling pants. Yes.
Maybe they're with the sign from that picture that we want.
I need it all. So I was wondering, Lee, if you could tell us a little bit about the Essex Street Cheese and how you came to be working with them. And how you met the founders, Daphne Zeppos and Jason Hines.
It's a very special company that I now get to run and manage. I started Essex Street Cheese Company started in 2006 by Jason Hines and Daphne Zeppos. Jason obviously runs Neil's Yard Dairy as well, one of the owners. But Daphne was still working at Artisanal at the time. Was a cheese educator and had this vision of bringing great Comté to the masses in the U.S., and that's where the company started. But she was still teaching at Artisanal at the time as well, and that's where I met her. And I thought, who is this crazy Greek woman? Oh, my goodness. But I knew this Comté was amazing, and when I went to leave, she called me and said, hey, would you be willing to come and work for me? And I was like, well, I need a cheese job, sure. And then she offered me $40 a week.
That sounds about right.
And I had to drive to Brooklyn for it. And my dad, being a banker, was like, when are you going to get a real job and, you know, maybe move out or pay the bills or something? But I said, I think there's something really cool here and I want to try. So I started working for the company in October 2007. And it has just slowly... 2008, yes, thank you. Slowly grown. We started with Comté. Now, of course, we have the Goudas from Betty and Martin Koster. Crovero, Parmesan, Manchego, and soon to be a fifth.
You just traveled over to Daphne's
just got back
homeland,
from Greece. That was an amazing trip to learn a lot about Daphne. Of course, Daphne passed away in 2012. But she's always with us as a company. Everything, all the decisions we make are based on her legacy and her vision for what we were.
Sure.
So now I work for the company full-time as a sales and logistics manager. And then we brought Rachel on full-time as well for sales.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Rachel, yeah. You were working for Jason in another capacity.
I was, yeah.
Weren't you?
So Leah, when she started, because she was only getting $40 an hour from Essex, she had to tag team other jobs. So she did Zabar's and she did Neil's Yard Dairy and who knows what else. And so when I was now ready in tears and call her for a cheese job, and CMI moved me, and I was like, I need to be in cheese. So then I started working at Essex part-time because that's all we had available. And then Daphne passed away, so I ran and started up the Daphne Zeppos Teaching Award, which is a scholarship that was set up in her honor.
Yeah.
So that's what how I got back into cheese was those two things. And then when Leah needed to go full-time for Essex, I then took over her position at Neil's Yard Dairy as well. So I was doing all three of those until February of this year, and now I'm full-time Essex Street as well as still running the Daphne Zeppos Teaching Award. But yeah, I did Neil's Yard for 2 years, and it was amazing. I mean, Leah did for four. You learned so much with that company. It's just mind-blowing being able to travel there, of course, but also just their style of how they sell cheese, how they take care of cheese. Is incredibly invaluable to take that to any other company then, and I apply all of those that I've learned when I work in a shop or when I'm working and trying to sell Essex cheeses and stuff. So, yeah, it was pretty amazing being able to be with them for 2 years.
So now your life has come around full circle.
It
You're
is.
Working
We're back with
your...
family again. I try yes. to run away.
I know. But
keep getting pulled back in.
And it's that whole talking thing. I stole a line from Jason. It's our mentality at Essex. We taste and we talk. We eat so much cheese and we talk a lot about it. Everything else we do is a byproduct of that, but we taste and we talk, and that's what we grew up doing at the shop, and that's what we still do today.
Because that was, I mean, for us, that's the only way we got to learn, because there wasn't, back then, now there's so many cheese books, and there's the internet, and you can travel, but for us, we couldn't travel as much as, you know, we were in the middle of nowhere, Utah, and there wasn't local cheesemakers that you could just go visit, like here in Vermont you can go, or upstate New York, and so you had to just taste cheese. What did it taste like to you? And then talk about it to your customers, because you didn't have the ability to just do tons and tons of research on it. We did as much as we could, but.
Well, yeah, I had the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the my world was the cheese, mm-hmm. and it was how I had to see through everything. Mm-hmm. And speaking of travel, Anna, you are back in to the cheese world. You have a company
we keep coming back to cheese, right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
And now your company is travel and cheese, correct?
Yeah, you know, we talk about like all the different things that have impacted us and our appreciation for cheese, and you know, whether it's reading or seeing other people work with cheese, the most important thing that have impacted us was travel. And when you can go and meet those producers and have that experience and know the story firsthand, it's life changing. And what it does to those that are in the profession or even to the customer is a significant piece of their story. And so for a number of years, I had a vision of like creating an opportunity for people to be able to travel, and especially that retail customer. We kind of keep going back to them in the U.S. We have this growing, amazing amount of artisanal cheese producing now and an appreciation for that. But there's so much more that is important that we can help to tell the story. And that became then my commitment to kind of help do that. And so Chris George of Neil's Yard Dairy, of course, and I had known each other for years, and he came to Manhattan and we said, hey, we've got this vision, let's build this opportunity for people. And it's been great. And take them to those locations. So we have some trips going right now for England and for France this fall. And then we're finishing up a tour that we're building for Oregon, and have pulled in other educators like Steve Jones, Max McCallman, Janet Fletcher will be working with us on a California trip. So
That's
we're
fantastic.
Excited about that. Yeah.
So you said it. So travel is key. Travel and cheese are you gals' thing. Yeah. So do you have any crazy Jewel family travel story.
Yeah, it has to be the one in Roquefort. That's the craziest thing we've ever done.
We were talking about this on the way here.
We have a lot of weird ones, but this one's crazy. So we did a month family vacation in France and road tripping.
Like a national...
Oh, totally. National Lampoon's France style. Yeah.
I love it.
In a Volkswagen van.
Because if you see us... This is radio, but if you see us, we look very German. So this is just so cliche. And so we're driving around France, but the last leg of the trip was like Roquefort, Lyon, and Avignon, and stuff like that. So we're down there. And we're on our way to the Roquefort Caves, so we're starving, and it's midday, like in France, so you have to stop, because otherwise, if it's past 2 o'clock, you won't eat.
Sure.
So it's 1:30, we're getting nervous that we won't find anything, and this is before Yelp and smartphones and stuff, so we just find a village, go in, find a cafe, and we're like, okay, let's hope we can eat. Again, this huge VW Eurovan, these tiny little things, I mean, we nearly took off the side of a building that I'm sure had been there since the 14th century. It was just ridiculous.
Just rolling through just those rolling tiny through. Streets.
Tiny streets. Finally,
and the Frenchies are saying, oh, those Germans are here.
Oh, those Germans are here.
Little do they know.
Little do they
you're
know.
Americans. Which is worse.
What's worse? Yeah, what's worse? Germans are Americans.
And we don't speak French.
I didn't speak French at the time.
We had no fear. We were fearless.
They just throw you right out of the country.
Just throw you right out of the country. And so we finally get the car parked somehow. And then we get into the cafe and it's 1:45, which makes the French very upset because it's like you were supposed to be here at 12 and we're done at 2. But we make them do the menu du jour, which was only, we thinking, it was 11 euros. 6 courses, fantastic. This is super cheap.
Six courses for 11 euros.
With wine.
With wine included. And so we're like, oh, this is awesome. So we're going through, we're eating and eating and eating, and we get down to the last course, which is, of course, cheese. And so they bring out on a turntable a big thing of cheese. It's a huge piece.
And oh, by the way, no one speaks English.
And no one speaks English.
And we speak only this little bit of French.
Say bonjour, merci.
Merci, that's it. Couldn't even count in French. And so they drop this down. We're thinking, wow, this is huge for 4 people, but awesome, you know?
Right.
And so we couldn't eat it all. You know, we had 5 courses already, and it's like, what are we going to do? But can't waste this. This is like raw milk Roquefort and like all this like really amazing stuff. And so we're thinking we'll take it to go because
it's so American.
So American.
Can we get a doggy bag?
Yeah. How do you say?
Because you know, Americans, we once it comes to the table, it's yours, right?
Because like, we're thinking health code laws and yeah. So we ended up getting in a big fight with the owner. The madame came out yelling at us in French because we were trying to steal her cheese. And
it was the communal cheese plate.
But
like
Papa Jewel rescued us.
Papa Jewel rescued you.
He rescued us by just tipping really, really heavily.
Yes, and patting his stomach.
Same, magnifique. And then
you sped away.
I sped away
in your VW van.
Just and ran have away. Never gone back to never, the French village
because we were the people who stole the cheese plate.
We were so horrified.
So horrible.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's a fantastic story. Yeah. Unfortunately, we're going to have to end here just because, you know, there are other people that need to come in and talk food on the radio. But I want to thank all three of you for coming in and chatting with us, chatting with me and giving us a little insight into how family and cheese have kept you guys going for so long. And I want to say thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. It's fun.
So stay tuned, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.